the film called A World Apart. And this is a scene where the fictionalized Sean, your sister, confronts her mother about a suicide attempt while she was in prison.
I was afraid. I was afraid I would have put other people in danger.
What people?
Our friends, people like Harold.
Your friends, your work, that's all you care
about.
Right,
my friends, my work, yes. But what we care about is the whole country.
What about me?
You live here, you eat here, I'm down the passage. But what about Elsie's children?
I'm not Elsie's child, I'm your child.
Now listen to me. Elsie can't live with her children. Why? Because she's black. At Sharpeville, people were shot down, shot in the back, shot running away. Solomon, he's been murdered.
I know, man. Stop treating me like a child.
All right, you're right. You do know. I know you know. But I also know how much you'd understand if you only let yourself.
You never tell me anything. I don't know what's going
on. We can't even talk amongst ourselves. It's not safe.
I don't even know where Daddy is. Where he left. It's not fair. I'm never with me. And all.
From the film A World Apart, Robin, your response to growing up with your mother and what that scene was at the point, what point in her life?
Well, that was in 1963 when Joe was out of the country and Ruth was actually arrested under the 90-day detention law, which, you know, they suspended. There was no habeas corpus in South Africa, so they just arrested her, did not charge her, kept her in for 90 days, and then on the 90th day released her and rearrested her and kept her in. And I think she at that point just lost hope. She's written a book about it. And this scene that's taking place that Sean wrote about, it, essentially the film is both a sort of praise poem to Ruth and what a fantastic woman she was, and also it's an examination of how difficult it is to be the children of people who spend their whole lives fighting to save other children. And it's, you know, I mean, I wouldn't regret it for a second. I feel so privileged, as does Sean, to have had parents who set such a wonderful example. But there's no question it's a tough life for children. You know, our parents were not as around as much as they should have been. And that scene, I think, is about that dilemma.
And Tim, there are lots of great stories in the world. Why did you decide you wanted to be in this film and be a part of this at this particular time?
Well, the script was so compelling. The idea was about not a star of the movement, but a worker within the movement. It also, on a pure entertainment level, had a real kind of compelling pulse to it. It's got an action element. It really works as an entertainment. Directed by Philip Noyce, who really does know how to do those kinds of movies. He's done some pretty exciting thrillers in the past. And what I truly love about the movie is here you have this movie that's churning along like this locomotive, like an action movie. And it gets to that final reel and that obligatory scene that the audience is expecting, that one where the good guy gets the bad guy and there's some retributive act of violence and the audience erupts, is not there. The filmmaker asks you, the audience, respects the audience, I think, enough to know that they don't need that, that there's something even more exciting and more compelling and more inspiring in the final reel of this story. And that is the story of Patrick Chamuso, the true story. The true story of South Africa, the true story of Mandela, the idea that you can come out of years and years of oppression and years of internment with a sense of forgiveness, with a sense of the future, with a vision for the future that allows for it's the movement, the leaders, to say, no, we're moving forward. We're not going to look backwards. We're not going to be one of these countries that is going to waste years and years of time with retribution, with trials, with tribunals, with people being drug out of their houses in the middle of the night, being beaten in the streets. That's not going to happen here. And when you go to South Africa, you realize this, it is a miracle. It is this truly remarkable achievement that's happened there. And if you think about history, it's really never been done, where you've come to the end of a struggle or the end of a war, and the leaders have said, let's forgive.
I wanted to turn to another scene, this one you're in, Tim Robbins' character, police security branch officer Nick Vos, trying to get information about Patrick's whereabouts from his wife. Her name is Precious.
Going back to work? Have you left? You lost your house now. Living in a one-room shack. No money coming in. Maybe I can help you, Precious. Use my influence. Find you somewhere better to live. When you hear from Patrick, you let me know. You must ask yourself, where is he? Who's he with now? Where does he sleep at night?
Nick Vos, he's the apartheid colonel, trying to question Precious as he drives along the car, and she won't answer as she's walking on the road. What kind of research did you do for this?
Well, both Derek Luke and I, Derek plays Patrick Tremuso, when we got to Africa, we realized not only did we have to get these characters and these difficult accents, but we really had to discover a continent, you know, and truly discover what South Africa was all about. Each country being a completely different entity in Africa. The idea of approaching the subject matter was pretty daunting, but Philip Noyce had so many people from South Africa on the film, hired a pretty exclusively South African crew. So we all had advisors. He had Patrick, he had other people from the ANC, I had special branch officers, all of whom wanted to tell their story, all of whom felt that it was necessary to tell this story. Which is another element of the whole idea of moving forward and forgiveness, and the idea that I was playing someone who had done illegal things, and I had advisors who had done those things there as part of kind of a sense of, I don't know, spiritual rebirth or that started with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and has continuing through this day with people like my advisor, Henty Botha, who was clearly trying to absolve some kind of guilt or trying to move past what his past had forced upon him. A lot of these guys, you know, as difficult as it was for me to get my head around, the idea of what it means to cross that line, and who is asking whom to cross that line, and there's a lot of bitterness with these guys now, being made the bad guys in retrospect, when in fact they were doing the bidding of a South African government. It was their duty to do this policing. They were encouraged to break the law. It was kept in secret. They couldn't come forward. They couldn't share it with their wives. And in retrospect, they were the ones that were blamed, when in fact the leaders of the country were the ones that had forced this kind of policy upon them.
Won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Exactly. Right, exactly. And as they put it, living in mansions with very healthy pensions, while we, you know, have lost our families. A lot of these guys' wives divorced them when they found out the truth. And they historically are bearing the brunt of the blame. And it begs the larger question, you know, when you are serving your country, when you are out of duty, out of patriotism, trying to enforce the policies of the administration you're working for, where does the moral bottom line, where is it drawn? How much can you walk away from that? A lot of these guys felt enslaved to it. They felt that if they walked away, they would be betraying country, they would be bringing shame upon their family. I asked why didn't you? They said we couldn't. It was like we were in the middle of a war and would be to leave the battlefield. So some did, but it was a very, very difficult decision to make.
So trying to capture the humanity of the people on the front lines on the oppressing side is really a difficult task. I'm reminded of the film, that classic Marlon Brando character in Burn in the mm-hmm. 1970s film, trying mm-hmm. to portray an English intelligence officer, or the Indochine film where the French inspector trying to chase Vietnamese guerrillas in the 1950s, a similar type of thing. What happens in a resistance movement to the people on the front lines who are fighting that resistance?
Well, and they're all victims of the struggle. It's not to justify or rationalize it at all, but you can't torture a person and walk out of the room with a clean soul. It's just not going to happen. In your duty, in your performance of that duty, you are oftentimes compromising yourself and your own humanity, your own morality, to a irrecoverable place, a place where you for the rest of your life have been compromised by your participation in something like torture.
Which brings us inevitably to a conversation about today. And after the break, we're going to go to an interview with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Well, today is the announcement of the new Nobel Peace Prize. It's going to Mohamed Yunus. Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa won the Nobel Peace Prize. And this week he turns 75. And Robin, your other sister, you're the youngest of three, Sean being the oldest, and Jillian Slovo, the middle sister, and then you, the youngest, Robin. Jillian wrote a fascinating play together with Victoria Britton, putting together the testimony of men at Guantanamo, called Guantanamo. And when it opened in New York, Archbishop Desmond Tutu came and did some of the reading. I'd like you both, in ending this conversation, to talk about the relevance today.
Okay, and you're back to with Teresa and myself. My name's Trillium. We're here to tell you why it's so important for you to call 503-232-8818 right now and become a member of KBOO. Or if you're already a member, it is the time to renew that membership. We're really excited to be here with you today. And if you're outside the Portland area, you can call us at 1-877-500-5266. That is toll-free. We've got lots of volunteers standing by to take your calls.
And we know you like to listen to Amy Goodman, and we have her book, which is called Static, Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman. And her author brother, David Goodman, have written this book. And it's a $24 value, but it's our special gift to you for joining. When you join KBOO, you become a member. You become a voting member. You're able to participate directly and in an informed basis on the running of the station. You also get the program guide, which contains coupons in it, but the best thing about the program guide is that it tells you what's on and when. And so if you've been wondering when to catch that conjunto music, or when to listen to Bhangra, or when to catch your favorite public affairs programming, then you do it by joining KBOO, and you get the program guide in the mail. It tells you what's on and when. And you do that by calling 503-232-8818 right now. Right now, while we have people waiting for your call, and for those of you in Vancouver, Camas, White Salmon, Salem, Corvallis, remember that we have put up extra translators and we've pumped out extra power so that you can hear our signal, and we very much need to hear from you. And that number is toll-free, 1-877-500-5266. Say it again so you can write it down. Grab a crayon. 1-877-500-5266. And we'd love to have a call from you right now, because it would fire us up.
And becoming a member of KBOO also makes you a part of a global network of democratically run media community radio institutions all over the world. It's a wonderful thing. You know, the U.S. government has a program where they spend $10 million a year to fly a plane over Cuba to transmit what would appear to be like a community radio station. Now, that's the kind of thing that we and the grassroots movements are kind of like that tiny little bird that can, with one little peck, bring down a hawk, because we are the people's movements of the world. And we have real community radio, and it's based on you, the listener. You are the one that keeps us going. And you do that by calling 503-232-8818. We ask you to do that two times a year to pledge your support. And for those listeners further away, we have a toll-free number set up, 1-877-500-5266. We keep you informed. We invite you to come down here and be a part of the process. It's a very open, inclusive environment, and we are excited to invite you to be a part of it. And it's really easy to do.
It's easy to do. Actually, yeah, if you want to come down right now, we have Thai food from Esan. They were very generous to give us quite a bit of food. And it's just it's one of those Cascadian experiences that is great to have, coming down to KBOO and seeing what it's all about. And we have people come through all the time and get little tours. 503-232-8818. Well, I guess if I'm going to say come on down, I should say where we're at. We're at 20 Southeast 8th, which is just on the southeast side of the Burnside Bridge, across the mighty Willamette Sewer. 1-877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266. Say, did you know that the Willamette has something in common with the Nile?
What's that?
It's a navigable river that flows north.
I did not know that.
I think it's just about the only other one.
Always learning something new from Teresa Mitchell here. Teresa Mitchell is full of facts and figures and amazing bits of history that seem to have been lost to most other people.
Are you saying I'm brimming with it today?
A resource in our station. And that's another thing I love about KBOO, is that over the years, I have had these wonderful mentors at KBOO. It truly is a jewel in our community. And the only way that we keep going is because the community supports us. And that's you. If you're new to Portland, don't hesitate. Maybe it's new to you to hear somebody on your community radio station. Maybe you haven't had one before asking you to call and participate. But we're saying go for it. Don't wait. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You know, you can get a nice gift as well if you'd like Amy Goodman's book that she wrote with her brother, David Goodman, called Static. All you need to do is call and make a pledge. That would be a $90 minimum pledge for that book. And if you wanted to crank that up to $100 for the year, that would be $1.89 a week. That's not that much.
It's easier to do than you think. It only takes a few minutes to call us. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes, really. And what we do is we get down your information, because it is a pledge to give us money rather than an actual transference on the spot of money. And so there's different ways to do it. We can take your credit card. You can just agree to send us $40 or something. Now, what I like to suggest, and what many people can do, is if you're solvent, you're employed, you got a bank account, why don't you send us $10 a month? And that puts you in a category in which we can give you some of our more special gifts. And I wanted to pass on some of those to you. The number to call, 503-232-8818. We have books, The Water of Life by Michael Mead. Perhaps you just heard that on Marlena's show, A Mythic Tapestry of Multicultural Stories. Naked Republicans by Shelley Lewis. Well, you can guess what that's about. And have you gotten your Wee Moon calendar yet? How can you do without a Wee Moon calendar? I've got to get mine. Gaia Rhythms for Women, published by Mother Tongue, Inc. And you can get that, and why not just call us right now, 1-877-500-5266. Pledge $10 a month. Come on, you can do that. I mean, let's get at least that minimum effort going towards the revolution, shall we? And 503, if you're in the local area, 503-232-8818. Now's the time to call. We still have a couple lines open. You can get right in.
And Jenna from Portland called in and pledged 1 hour's wage per month. Thank you, Jenna. I think that's a great idea. All you other folks who want to do that, just dial up 503-232-8818, and we're going to be getting right back to Amy Goodman. So we want to hear those phones ring, 1-877-500-5266. Thank you.
So he dedicated the rest of his life, his entire life, to fighting to free his comrades from Robben Island and also to help change South Africa. And of course his dream came true, because he returned in 92 and became part of the first government. So it's a wonderful story.
And amazingly, not only your father but your mother were both university classmates with Nelson Mandela and also the founder of the Mozambique Freedom Movement of Frelimo in the 1940s. It's an astonishing collection of people who have built friendships from their university days as radical students.
Yeah.
In terms of your life with your parents and the kinds of things that you were exposed to as children in this continuing battle, would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we're talking about the 50s and the 60s, when repression really started to become intense in South Africa. And my memory, along with Sean, the screenwriter, and our other sister Gillian, is that we were constantly being harassed. You know, even as children, our parents were continuously being arrested, put in prison. There were all sorts of trials, and that we were brought up totally with the knowledge, because we were children, of not exactly knowing what was going on, but knowing that there were all sorts of illicit things. For example, you couldn't meet with black people. You literally couldn't have a black person in your house. And so we would be aware, when there was a meeting taking place with our parents and there was a black South African there, that this was to be kept secret. And the other thing I want to say is, obviously, one of the things that had the greatest impact upon our family was that in 1982, our mother, Ruth First, was working in Mozambique. She was an academic, predominantly. She was different from Joe. She was as active as Joe, but she did it through the world of academia, through the UN. She wrote books. She wrote pamphlets. She was a speaker, a very important anti-apartheid activist. She was murdered by a parcel bomb, which was sent to her in Mozambique by the special branch.
Robin, your sister, Sean, also wrote a film that was based on the life of your mother, the film called A World Apart. And this is a scene where the fictionalized Sean, your sister, confronts her mother about a suicide attempt while she was in prison.
I was afraid. I was afraid I would have put other people in danger.
What people?
Our friends, people like Harold.
Your friends, your friends, your work, that's all you care
about. My friends, my work, yes. But what we care about is the whole country.
What about me?
You live here, you eat here, I'm down the passage. But what about Elsie's children?
I'm not Elsie's child, I'm your child.
Now listen to me. Elsie can't live with her children. Why? Because she's black. At Sharpeville, people were shot down, shot in the back, shot running away. Solomon, he's been murdered.
I know that. Stop treating me like a child.
All right, you're right. You do know. I know you know. But I also know how much you'd understand if you only let yourself.
You never tell me anything. I don't know what's going
on. We can't even talk amongst ourselves. It's not safe.
I don't even know where Daddy is. Where he left. It's unfair. He'll never with me. And
from the film A World Apart, Robin, your response to growing up with your mother and what that scene was at what point in her life?
Well, that was in 1963, when Joe was out of the country and Ruth was actually arrested under the 90-day detention law, which, you know, they suspended. There's no habeas corpus in South Africa, so they just arrested her, did not charge her, kept her in for 90 days, and then on the 90th day released her and rearrested her and kept her in. And I think she at that point just lost hope. She's written a book about it. And this scene that's taking place that Sean wrote about, essentially the film is both a sort of praise.
My advisor, Henty Botha, who was clearly trying to absolve some kind of guilt or trying to move past what his past had forced upon him. A lot of these guys, you know, as difficult as it was for me to get my head around, the idea of what it means to cross that line, and who is asking whom to cross that line. And there's a lot of bitterness with these guys now, being made the bad guys in retrospect, when in fact they were doing the bidding of a South African government. It was their duty to do this policing. They were encouraged to break the law. It was kept in secret. They couldn't come forward. They couldn't share it with their wives. And in retrospect, they were the ones that were blamed, when in fact the leaders of the country were the ones that had forced this kind of policy upon them.
Won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly. And as they
Mandela.
Put it, as they put it, living in mansions with very healthy pensions, while we, have lost our families. A lot of these guys' wives divorced them when they found out the truth, and they historically are bearing the brunt of the blame. And it begs the larger question, when you are serving your country, when you are out of duty, out of patriotism, trying to enforce the policies of the administration you're working for, where does the moral bottom line, where is it drawn? How much can you walk away from that? A lot of these guys felt enslaved to it. They felt that if they walked away, they would be betraying country, they would be bringing shame upon their family. I asked why didn't you? They said we couldn't. It was like we were in the middle of a war and we'd be to leave the battlefield. So some did, but it was a very, very difficult decision to make.
So, trying to capture the humanity of the people on the front lines on the oppressing side is really a difficult task. I'm reminded of the film, that classic Marlon Brando character in Burn in the 1970s film, trying to portray an English intelligence officer, or the Indochine film where the French inspector trying to chase Vietnamese guerrillas in the 1950s, a similar type of thing. What happens in a resistance movement to the people on the front lines who are fighting that resistance?
Well, in the end, they're all victims of the struggle. It's not to justify or rationalize it at all, but you can't torture a person and walk out of the room with a clean soul. It's just not going to happen. In your duty, in your performance of that duty, you are oftentimes compromising yourself and your own humanity, your own morality, to a irrecoverable place, a place where you for the rest of your life have been compromised by your participation in something like torture.
Which brings us inevitably to a conversation about today. And after the break, we're going to go to an interview with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Well, today is the announcement of the new Nobel Peace Prize. It's going to Mohamed Yunus. Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa won the Nobel Peace Prize. And this week he turns 75. And Robin, your other sister, you're the youngest of three, Sean being the oldest, and Jillian Slovo, the middle sister, and then you, the youngest, Robin. Jillian wrote a fascinating play together with Victoria Britton, putting together the testimony of men at Guantanamo, called Guantanamo. And when it opened in New York, Archbishop Desmond Tutu came and did some of the reading. I'd like you both, in ending this conversation, to talk about the relevance today.
The idea that when you throw out due process, it's a slippery slope. You not only compromise the agents of the state that are working for you, but you're compromising the whole process.
Well, I realize I've been informed by a number of callers and other people around here that we're repeating parts of the program which we've already aired, which doesn't surprise me too much, considering how I've screwed it up pretty much all morning. But we're going to try and get it back on track. So in the meantime, let's go out to Membership Central and hear once more from those folks.
Aw, heck. Well, we know it usually goes perfectly, and it's because of you, Jim Braun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And right now we have gotten in $975 so far towards our goal of 1,200, so we are moving right along, and really glad to hear that people are supporting Democracy Now, because I consider it, well, a lot of people got together and just kind of sat on KBOO for a long time, and our democratic process eventually moved. We all had to get convinced first, but that's the way it ought to be, And we pay for the program, and we bring it in here, and you can hear Amy Goodman doing her thing. And right now, you can get a book by Amy Goodman by calling us and joining, which is something you very much need to do, and especially in these times. You know, right now we're coming up on elections that the Republicans can't afford to lose, but they are going to lose. So what do you think they're going to do, Trillium?
I don't know. I don't deal with that department.
Stay tuned to KBOO because that's the only place you're going to get straight dope on whatever weird stuff comes down. You know that it will. 503-232-8818. And Democracy Now! Is something you can count on as well. And it's very appropriate that we get our funding directly from you because that's what has kept the character of this radio station. That's why we never sold out. That's why we never went with the Wealthy Stations Project. Y'all probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but we've had opportunities to sell out, frankly. We've turned them away time and again. 1-877, if you're outside the Portland dialing area, please call us now at 1-877-500-5266 and get yourself a copy of Static by Amy Goodman. It's easy to do. I would like to suggest, as I've said once before, you got a job, you got a bank account. Well, let us take $10 a month out because that evens out our funding throughout the year. It's very good for us. It's very easy on you. You won't miss that $10 and you'll get the program guide. You'll get the book and, we cut deals too when you call us on the phone and it just takes a minute.
If two of you call right now with a pledge of $10 a month, that means we'll make our goal. Hooray. And everybody will be happy back here and smiling and dancing because really, this is a group effort. We come to you two times a year and ask you to pledge your support so that this station can keep going. And I don't think this station is going anywhere. Frankly, I think that we are going to be part of this community because always people step up and they pledge their support. So a great sound for that support would be to hear these phones ring right now. 503-232-8818 is the number to call if you're in Portland. Outside the Portland area, please call us at 1-877-500-5266 and do your part. That's what we ask each person to participate. If you hear yourself saying things like, I heard it on Democracy Now! Or I heard it on KBOO! Or wow, I was listening to Teresa Mitchell's show and she blew me away with those facts and figures, then you need to be putting some action behind those words. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
I love Pledge Drive. One of the reasons I love Pledge Drive is I love to party. Another big reason is I'm a chow hound, and I love to come down here. It's like this morning I got some bagels with lox. So, and now we're eating Essan's food, and that is Thai food. And according to regulations, I can't tell you anything about the food except that I am very pleased and grateful to Essan at 2764 Northwest Thurman Street for giving us a great deal of their fried rice and pad thai. And I was also pleased that it was a great deal because I like to eat tons of fried rice.
Yum.
We're having such a good time. So you could come in and probably still get yourself a sample of that if you want and just make a pledge that way. But I would like to suggest, since it is so easy and since it only takes just like a couple of minutes, for you to pick up the phone right now, find a phone, dial 503-232-8818. You can do it so swiftly that you can pull it off at work without getting cut. And if you're in Salem or Corvallis or Eugene or Vancouver or Camas or anywhere outside the local Portland area, remember that we have paid extra to get our signal to you, and we would very much appreciate you calling in and pledging us whatever you like at 1-877-500-KBOO, 1-877-500-5266.
Let's say those numbers one more time, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We'll go back to Amy Goodman now. Thanks.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report, The Music Slave Driver by Bob Marley and the Wailers from the album Catch a Fire. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
We end today's show with the words of South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu. In 1984, Tutu won the Nobel Peace Prize. At the time, he was at the forefront of the anti-apartheid campaign. Earlier this week, he turned 75. Over 1,000 people, including Nelson Mandela, gathered in Johannesburg to pay tribute to the man.
And because today is the day of the announcement of the new Nobel Peace Prize winner, Mohamed Yunus and the Grameen Bank, we thought we'd bring you Desmond Tutu's words. A new biography on him has just been published. It's entitled Rabble Rouser for Peace. Well, I had the opportunity to interview Archbishop Desmond Tutu 2 years ago. He was visiting New York for a reading of the play Guantanamo at the Culture Project. Again, it was written by Robin Slovo's sister, Jillian Slovo, and Victoria Britton. I asked him for his response to what is happening at Guantanamo.
For someone coming from South Africa, you said, but I mean, that's exactly what they were doing for exactly the same reasons that they gave. I mean, you said, why do you detain people without trial? Why do you ban people as you're doing? And the response from the South African government was security of the state. And anyone who questioned it would then be regarded, especially if you're white, as being unpatriotic. And I just want to say to you, is this something that you want done in your name? Isn't it time there was the same sense of outrage that people had about apartheid, which people should have had about the Holocaust? And what would happen if it was Americans held by some other country under these conditions? The point is, God has actually got no one. The God we worship is strange. They say this God is omnipotent, but God is also very weak. There's not a great deal that God seems to be able to do without you.
During your years in South Africa, before the end of apartheid, you were a deep advocate of nonviolence, yet you saw so many detained, so many killed. What do you feel, and what did you feel then? How did you make it through those days? What did you advocate? How did you stick to your principles of nonviolence?
One of the wonderful things, actually, is, but I've got to speak as a Christian, is belonging to the church and knowing that you belong to this extraordinary body. When things were really rough, it's wonderful to recall for me now, but I sometimes got, when the South African government had taken away my passport, I got passports of love from Sunday school kids here in New York, and I plastered them on the walls of my office, that although I couldn't travel, hey, here were all of these you said, but I mean, that's exactly what they were doing for exactly the same reasons.
What do you feel, and what did you feel then? How did you make it through those days? What did you advocate? How did you stick to your principles of nonviolence?
One of the wonderful things, actually, is, when I've got to speak as a Christian, is belonging to the church. And knowing that you belong to this extraordinary body. When things were really rough, it's wonderful to recall for me now, but I sometimes got, when the South African government had taken away my passport, I got passports of love from Sunday school kids here in New York, and I plastered them on the walls of my office, that although I couldn't travel, hey, here were all of these without the support of people like ourselves, without the support of those who were students at the time, who might have been crazies, but they were fantastic in their commitment. And in this country, actually, they showed that you could in fact change the moral climate. Because at the time, the Reagan administration was totally opposed to sanctions. And students, but not just students, the many, many people who were prepared to be arrested on our behalf, who demonstrated on our behalf, who boycotted on our behalf, well, they changed the moral climate to such an extent that Congress passed the anti-apartheid legislation, and they even managed a veto override, which was fantastic. And so I just happened. I always say I was a leader by default, because our real leaders were either in jail or in exile. And sometimes when people say, and he got the Nobel Peace Prize, I say, well, actually, you know, it was that they thought maybe it was time it was given to a black. And, he has an easy surname. imagine if I'd had a surname like Mukakauli.
Archbishop Tutu, how do you feel? How do you feel about...
You can pronounce that.
How do you feel about the invasion and occupation of Iraq?
It was fantastic seeing the many, many people who came out in opposition. It was fantastic. You know, sometimes when you say, Americans, or, people nowadays don't care. It's not true. Millions turned out. Millions, millions said, no. Give peace a chance. And I said, as so many of them, I wasn't the only one. The Pope said so too. The Archbishop of Canterbury said so. The Dalai Lama said so. That this war if it was to be a justifiable war in terms of the just war theory, would have to be one that was declared by a legitimate authority. And the administration here was aware of that. That's why they went to the UN. There's no point in going to the UN if you had already decided. They probably, of course, had decided. But, I mean, there was no point unless they believed or they realized, I mean, that in order for it to be legitimate and therefore justifiable, the only authority would have to be the UN. And when they didn't get what they wanted from the UN, they did what they did. We said then, and we keep saying so, not just that it was illegal, it was immoral. And the consequences of it just now, I mean, you've really got to be blind to say, well, yeah, it's okay, we removed Saddam Hussein. Why didn't you say that was the reason for going? Because the world would have said, no. That isn't a reason that will be allowable for you to declare the war. And I'm sad that we seem so inured now. They tell you 100 people have been killed. And the United States and its allies are doing that. And they say, no, we targeted that house because our intelligence said so. Intelligence. The same intelligence that said they were weapons of mass destruction. Please. That's been done in your name. That mothers and children have been killed. And when you say, what about the civilian casualties? Say, sorry. Our intention was to target insurgents. And most of us, I think, just shrug our shoulders. But you see, you experienced a little bit on September the 11th the kind of thing that is meted out on a regular basis.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's from South Africa, turned 75 this week. And that does it for our broadcast. He was speaking at the Culture Project in New York. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shroof Abdelkadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Berichin, Frank Lopez, Aaron Mate, Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilier, engineers Uri Galed and Angela Alston. Our special thanks today. This weekend, tonight, I'll be in Tucson at 6 p.m., tomorrow in Pittsburgh at 3 at John Carroll University, in Cleveland at 7 p.m. At John Carroll, Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon, and on Sunday, Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Convention Center. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is KBOL Portland, and we are in Membership Drive, and we would be so glad to hear from you right now if you would like to join. Please call us at 503-232-8818. Spend a couple of minutes, make your pledge, let us send you a letter, and you can get a copy of Static by Amy Goodman. Now, you just heard Amy Goodman. You've been listening to Amy Goodman probably for years. And you know that if she writes a book, it's going to be juicy.
Mm-hmm. And it's a quick read, according to my mother, who got that book not too long ago. And it's a great gift. If you've already pledged your support Actually, some people do pledge their support more than once. Don't be shy. You can pledge as a gift for someone else and have them send the schedule for the KBOO programming as well as a gift like Static. Or you can get your own membership and get that book and many other great books we have as gifts for you, supporting our community and your community radio station. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. That's the toll-free number for those of you outside the 503 area code.
You know, Portland is a different town, and Cascadia is a different kind of a place. But one of the reasons that Portland is different and that areas that we broadcast to are different is because KBOO is there. And this has been commented on by several speakers who come through. For example, Noam Chomsky has mentioned it when he's come through. Michael Perini has noticed this phenomenon, has mentioned that he can really tell when he's in a town that has a good community radio station because people are more informed. They catch on to what he's saying. They catch his jokes. And that's, you know, that's the value. And so I would like to invite someone out there who knows, maybe someone who hasn't been in town all that long and can tell that that Portland is different. And you know why now. And I would like to invite you, a newcomer to town, to call 503-232-8818 and join KBOO because you'll be getting a program guide to tell you what's on and when, and you'll find that very valuable because we have some real jewels that are hidden here and there, and you'll know when to catch them and when to record them and all that sort of thing. And I would also like to ask those of you in Vancouver, Washington, in Camas, in Salem, in Corvallis and Eugene, and all the places that we broadcast to, please call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-500-5266, 1-877-500-KBOO, and join up. Get yourself a copy of Static by Amy Goodman. And by her brother also. I think we have some people to thank. We've had some calls come in.
We do. We have fans of KBOO, fans of Democracy Now!, and fans of Teresa Mitchell who have called up. Kim and Tigard renewed her membership. Jane called from Corvallis. Thank you, Jane, for renewing that membership and your kind words. Julie from Portland called to renew. And Philman from Vancouver is a brand new member here at KBOO, where you can reach us at 503-232-8818. We've got volunteers waiting to take your calls. They're very friendly. They're going to help you figure out the best way that if you want to do a monthly deduction from your checking account directly, they can set you up with that. Or if you just want to pull out the plastic and do a one-time contribution, they can help you with that as well. There are other options. Just call. Call now, 1-877-500-5266. There's no time like the present. We are about to hear from Helen Caldicott, and it is KBOO Community Radio that brings you this fine programming. So kick that support back to us. This is the time to own your station. Right now.
Unless I'm mistaken, I believe that we did get in a call, and so that means that we only need one $10 a month sustaining member, that's you, to call right now, and we will make our program goal of $1,200 for Democracy Now!. So now's the time to make that phone ring, 503-232-8818. Let me say it slower in the 503 area code, 232-8818. That's so you can scratch it on your arm with your fingernail. And if you're outside of the dialing area, 1-877-500-5266. I guess you'd have to scratch that one faster. Not 800 number, an 877 number, still toll free. 500-5266. Give us a call. Give us a thrill. Get the book. This is the time to do it.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa and Trillium. Thank you very much. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. It is News and Public Affairs Day here, the event that we have twice a year. Today is our fall News and Public Affairs Day, so you'll be hearing more news and public affairs all day until 9 p.m. tonight. And then there's a music special called Unlucky Special for Friday the 13th. We hope the rest of the day will be as lucky as we can make it. With your help, please give us that call of support and help the extended Democracy Now! Make its goal of $1,200 for this day of news and public affairs. We are going to hear from Dr. Helen Caldicott coming up in just a minute. We'll be hearing a recent talk she gave in Portland around the topic of nuclear power is not the answer, which is also the title of her latest book. We'll hear from activist and long anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan. Her new book is Not One More Mother's Child. She spoke recently in Portland. We'll hear that presentation. At around 3, we'll hear from author and lecturer David Corton on a recent talk in Portland called The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. And then to round out the afternoon around 4:15, 4:30, we'll hear Calvin Trillin and a talk that he gave here in Portland on his book, Heck of a Job. It's very amusing. Short talk at that time, we'll hear it. At 5 o'clock, it's the KBOO Evening News. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. They're having a great special tonight on Superwoman. I won't want to miss that. At 7 p.m., excerpts from Pacifica News' Network's 2006 election special series, Informed Dissent. And at 8 o'clock, award-winning investigative reporter Jason Leopold talks about what goes on behind the scenes in the world of political news reporting. His new book is called News Junkie. He covered the fallout from the CIA agent Valerie Plame's outing by the Bush administration, and his reporting on Halliburton's sale of nuclear technology to Iran was named as the second most censored story of 2007 by Project Censored. So now we want to start right now with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This talk was given in Portland just a few weeks ago, this summer, I believe. I have the date somewhere, but right now I don't see it. And it was given before an audience of naturopaths. It deals with a lot about science and children, cancer, and nuclear issues, nuclear power. And we hope that you'll enjoy this talk by Dr. Helen Caldicott, who has been heard many times on KBOO. She, as many people know, co-founded the Physicians for Social Responsibility. That group, the International Umbrella Group, won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. She also founded the Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament Group, WAND, in 1980. She is the author of many books, and as I mentioned, her most recent is Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. Here is Dr. Helen Caldicott.
I stand up here feeling a little bit embarrassed because my daughter practices integrative medicine as well, Penny, and she lives just next door to me on the same block of land. We've got an extended family. She married a French count. But she, if only she was here, she'd be absolutely fascinated with what you're doing. And so I'll take back your program and show her. But all the stuff you've got out there, she's always giving me coenzyme Q and all these things to take. I've got a bit of a plaque on my aorta, so she practices naturopathic medicine with me. Because I actually, I'm a pretty allopathic Western-trained physician. Now, we've got to get into some pretty scary stuff today, and it's very pertinent because, as you probably all know, the nuclear power industry is deciding that they're the answer to global warming. I do have a book that will be available for sale when Powell's bookshop turns up, and it is called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming or Anything Else, with lots and lots of data and information in it that you need to read and study like you would Grey's Anatomy to learn your anatomy, because this is a very, very important part of preventive medicine. If the nuclear industry goes ahead with its so-called renaissance, it's going to be extremely serious. How did I learn about all this nuclear stuff? Well, you know, I had a traditional medical training in Adelaide and I worked at Harvard. My specialty is cystic fibrosis. I trained with Harry Schwachman, who was the world's expert in CF. And so I had a very traditional background. But when I was about 15, I read a book and I lived in Melbourne, Australia, and the book was called On the Beach. And it described how people waited for death, really literally, till the fallout came down. They got such high doses they developed acute radiation sickness and their hair started falling out. They started bleeding around their gums, rectal bleeding, and eventually died of acute infection or massive hemorrhage because their platelets were killed. And at the end of that book, the beautiful, elegant streets of Melbourne were still there. The trams were still in the middle of the road, bits of paper flying down in the breeze. A blind was gently flapping. But that was the end of all human life. And that image implanted itself upon my soul as a little girl, well, an adolescent. And I lost my innocence. And because I'm curious, I read everything I could find thereafter about nuclear weapons. And at that time, Russia, America, and China and France were going hell for leather building nuclear weapons. And why I called my book Missile Envy was, if you look at the psychosexual dynamics of the people in the military and the nuclear power industry, many of them are sexual in the way they talk. They talk about missile erectors, soft laydowns, deep penetrations, orgasmic nuclear war, with no sense of embarrassment or shame in front of women. It's the way men talk about sport and football. And if you listen to that language, it's very sexual, very testosterone-oriented. Or if you read the ads for cars, it's all about testosterone. You go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds. Apart from the fact that, you know, that will cause global warming in the end of most life on Earth, it's still very sexy and they're still selling cars like that, amazingly so. So the nuclear industry is saying, look, we're the answer to global warming. Hands up those of you who've seen An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's film. Excellent. For those who haven't, it's absolutely mandatory viewing. Roger Ebert, you know Roger Ebert, the thumbs up guy? He said, I'm not going to do a review of this book. He said, of this film, I've never done this before. He said, but everybody must see it. I'm sure that George W. Bush hasn't seen it. Not sure if he's got the number of neurons necessary to inculcate the appropriate information. Cheney probably does, but he wouldn't be bothered because he's interested in power and oil. So we're in a very difficult situation. I think what I should do, though, as I am a pediatrician and got my training in Australia, and pediatricians are better trained in Australia than they are here. We actually become internists. Is to walk you through what happens when children get irradiated. And you probably all know. You know Alice Stewart's work that one X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in the offspring. Do you know about that work? Alice Stewart was a wonderful physician in England, and she did what's called the Oxford study and studied thousands of children and got the data, and that's what she found. The nuclear industry hated her. They denied her work, but eventually had to admit that it was an absolutely classical study. We know that because children's cells are mitosing continuously, that those cells are very vulnerable to the effects of radiation. And we know that children and babies are 10 to 20 times more radiosensitive than adults. And it's because of Alice Stewart's work that when you go into a radiologist's department, they say, are you in the first part of your menstrual cycle or the second? And if you're in the second part of the menstrual cycle, you don't get your X-ray because you may have conceived and may have a little morula sitting there in your uterus. So let's start right at the beginning of the fuel cycle, and I'm going to walk you right through the whole thing so you understand the immense dangers, and you're going to be so much better educated than George Bush or, in fact, my horrible little prime minister called John Howard. We're not very patriotic in Australia. We don't think we're the greatest country on earth. We don't fly flags and stuff. We lie on the beach and drink beer. And we actually don't go for politicians very much. I think that's because we don't like people in authority, because many of us come from convict stock. So we just jeer at people who think they're better than anyone else. In fact, we're very cynical to our detriment. But it's kind of healthy. Now, how did this all start? Well, years ago there was a man called Albert Einstein who was very brilliant, and he watched a tram go by and he suddenly realized that energy equals the mass by the speed of light squared, E equals mc squared, and thus really began the nuclear age. And he was a lovely man. And he rued the day that he really ever discovered E equals mc squared as they started building hydrogen bombs. And he said the splitting of the atom changed everything on Earth save man's mode of thinking. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. And if you want to look at the way men still think, just look at the way Donald Rumsfeld thinks. And I think there's a bell-shaped, I'm sort of going off track a little bit, but there's a bell-shaped curve of men, I think. On one end are all the men in this audience, loving, soft, kind men who would never hurt a fly. And then there are the majority who would go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in their cars, who would play those god-awful killing video games, which you see in the airports all the time, who would go to war but come back so traumatized that they never recover. Then at the other end is a very small minority of men whose reptilian midbrain has a toxic reaction to testosterone. And amongst those people, I would classify Donald Rumsfeld as one, Dick Cheney as one, George Bush. I'm not sure quite where he's at or if he quite understands much. But the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the like and the like. And they're the dangerous ones. And they're extremely neurotic, sometimes sociopathic. I think that Rumsfeld is a sociopath in that he lies consistently, but he's kind of charming about it. You know, if you look at the definition of sociopaths, that's what, how they sort of classify. And they're so neurotic in that they go to war with each other. You see it in corporations where, I even used to see it in medical school at Harvard, where they'd stab each other in the back in the corridors for power. And so they destroy each other psychologically, but the ultimate expression of this is actual killing. It's interesting, but though, that the old men don't go and kill themselves per se, they send the young boys off to kill, which is very sick. It's also interesting that society glorifies war. Notice how they, the Republicans, are calling this defense. And if Sartor beat Lieberman, he's soft on defense. It's nothing about defense, it's about killing. This country doesn't need defense. I mean, who's going to invade America? Goody, here's my book. This is the book you've got to buy when I've finished talking. Anyway, look, I've got off on the wrong track, but I'm terribly interested in etiology and the etiology of war. And my next book's going to be called Why Men Kill, but I'm going to really get stuck into the women too. 53% of us sit by and let them kill. And we tend to fall in love with the killers. I used to fall in love with alpha males. I couldn't help myself. So I think it's a way to get our eggs fertilized by the really strong, you know, genes. Anyway, it's going to be fun writing it. And the estrogen receptors in the brain and the oxytocin and the testosterone and where they have the impact upon the neurology of the human being. Anyway, that's my next book, and it'll take a while to write. I'm dedicating it to Donald Rumsfeld, whose photograph is going to be on the front cover, and I'm going to say, oozing testosterone from every pore, he oiled his way across the floor. I'm being a little disrespectful, but you know what I mean. And I am talking as a physician, and we are in danger of destroying most life on the planet. Okay, now, why... What's the radioactive material in the Earth's crust that can be used for deleterious purposes? It's uranium. And I know about uranium because I live in Australia, which is a country that has virtually no mountains. It's the oldest country on Earth's continent, and all the mountains have worn down. And so in the olden days, people would walk along creek beds and just kick nuggets of gold. We've got whole mountains of iron ore and tin and lead and you name it, but we've got 40% of the world's richest uranium. Now, when you dig up uranium, it's got two isotopes, 235 and 238, naturally occurring. This one is present in 0.7%, and it must be enriched to 3% for use in nuclear power plants, and this is the fissionable isotope. The bomb used on Nagasaki was a uranium bomb. The bomb used on Hiroshima was a plutonium bomb. My birthday is August the 6th, halfway sandwiched between Hiroshima Day and Nagasaki Day, where 200,000 people were almost literally vaporized. And thus began the age of nuclear genocide. This one is not fissionable. And it's called depleted uranium because it's depleted only of the isotope U-235. But it's not depleted of radiation. Now, I want to walk you through the various forms of radiation. You all understand X-rays. It's nice to talk to a medical audience. They're non-particulate. You don't become radioactive when you are X-rayed. But at the moment the beam goes through you, a regulatory gene could be damaged in a cell and later you could develop cancer. Most people do not understand the latent period of carcinogenesis is any time from 5 to 60 years. It's shorter in children because they're more radiosensitive. How do we know that? From the numerous studies, but particularly the Hiroshima and Nagasaki victims, who were all guinea pigs. and the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission studied all the victims of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, but they never treated them. And that's the Americans. They got all their data about radiation exposure from these people, but they never treated them or took responsibility for their injuries, and that still goes on today. So the first one is X-ray. The next one is gamma radiation. You know about that because it's given off by radioactive materials, and we use this in medicine, and we use various isotopes in medicine like radioactive iodine to diagnose thyroid cancer, to diagnose the metastases of the thyroid cancer, and give the patient a drink of I-131 to kill the cancer. The patient, of course, is radioactive and excretes I-131 for some weeks, so you shouldn't go near them, and I'm not sure many hospitals don't really treat the urine appropriately or the feces because it's full of radioactive iodine. The next one is an alpha emitter, and these uranium is an alpha emitter. So you have an atom, like the GE symbol, an atom, and an alpha particle is composed of two protons and two neutrons. It's particulate. It's heavy. It doesn't travel fast, so you can hold an alpha emitter in the palm of your hand, and the alpha particle does not get through the layers of dead cells in the epidermis to damage the living cells. So the nuclear industry says, well, it's not dangerous. I mean, the alpha particle is stopped by a piece of paper. True. But if you get it into your lung or into your gut and it gets into your liver or wherever and it's in contact with living, viable cells, it is extremely mutagenic and damages genes such that alpha emitters are amongst the most carcinogenic materials known to the human race, above and beyond dioxin or anything else. Beta, or you say beta radiation, is just an electron emitted from an unstable atom. It travels further because it's lighter, does the same thing. And then there are neutrons. Do you remember that accident in Japan a few years ago at Tokomura? A man had some uranium in a bucket, and he poured the bucket into another container of uranium, and it reached critical mass. To give you an example, plutonium is the fuel for hydrogen bombs. And 10 pounds is critical mass. So if you bring two hemispheres together of 5 pounds, you reach critical mass and you get a nuclear explosion. One person did that in the lab, I think, at Los Alamos years ago, and he disappeared. He just disappeared, vaporized. So therefore, when they poured this uranium into a bucket, it reached critical mass, and the neutrons started being shot off. Neutrons are interesting. They go through anything. Lead, steel, concrete, and these neutrons traveled many kilometers through the village of Tokomura, and everyone is saying, oh, it's only radiation, stay inside. But the neutrons passed through all the buildings and irradiated the people. They're very, very, very toxic, such that there was a man called Bernard Cohen who designed a neutron bomb, which is a great bomb. It's a capitalist bomb. And it doesn't have a lot of blast effect when you blow it up, but it's got a huge neutron surge. So you blow it up, and the buildings tend to stay intact, but the people get irradiated by neutrons, and they develop acute encephalopathic syndrome, and their brain swells. So within 48 hours, they're ataxic, like a drunk person. They develop convulsions, and they develop severe headaches, and they die of acute encephalopathic syndrome. And it's a terrific bomb because it's a great way to kill people, and you leave the buildings intact, except the buildings become radioactive because when material like calcium and the like is hit by neutrons, it becomes activated and becomes radioactive itself. But at the moment, America is big into building and developing new bombs, amongst which are neutron bombs.
You're listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. She spoke in Portland around the issues of nuclear power is not the answer on August 11th this past year at the Portland Convention Center. And we're listening to her talk right now. She is the first of a number of speakers that we will be listening to today, News and Public Affairs Day. And we hope you're enjoying this talk. It's a pretty hard-hitting talk, and Dr. Helen Caldicott is known for the way she describes things in detail and in pretty graphic language about what can happen with nuclear isotopes and such. So we ask you now, we're going to talk again with Teresa and Trillium, who are sitting next to me through a window. We're going to ask you to go to your call, go to your phone and make that call of support to KABU before we return from this break and go back to this talk by Dr. Helen Caldicott. Teresa, Trillium, how are things going out there?
We have been very encouraged by the money coming in. It looks like we made our goal for the last program, and now we have a new goal, $1,200. And we invite you right now to call 503-232-8818 and spend a couple of minutes on the phone. And what will happen is we'll take down your information and we'll decide how you would like to contribute. We have very many ways to do it. One of the more common ways, and the way that I like to suggest, is to agree to let us take $10 a month out of your bank account, something you won't notice, but which will give us steady funding throughout the year, and which will make you eligible for a number of our special thank you gifts. The other number to call, by the way, if you're listening outside the Portland dialing area, is 1-877-500-5266, and Trillium can tell you what our special thank you gifts are for this section.
Well, if you are enjoying this speech by Helen Caldicott, you can actually get a copy of Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, the CD, and a book for a $10 a month pledge. That's a really great deal to get both a book and a CD and support your community radio station, and you can do that by calling 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And you know, if 120 sounds like too much for your budget, $10 a month, you could do a $60 pledge of $5 a month if you decide to get it taken directly out of your checking account, and you can still get a CD of this speech, which is 79 minutes long, and really a great thing to share with others in your life as well. So you're hearing it now. You can get that CD. You can pass it on. What better gift than to share the gift of information, being well-informed? We're so lucky to have KABU and to have great people like Helen Caldicott who have dedicated their lives to this type of work and this kind of information. You hear it here on KABU, 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266 is our toll-free number. Call now. Don't wait. We're going to be putting that speech back on pretty soon, so you don't want to call when she's back on the air. It's better to call right now. Make that pledge. Say, whew, I have done my part as a community member to keep the airwaves free, to keep information flowing in my community, to make my community a better place, to make my world a better place. Call now. Don't hesitate.
You'll be joining others who have just called, including Andrea from Beaverton, Wayne from Tigard, Robert from Portland, Chris, Elijah, Sandra, Nick, Catherine, and let's see, all those were from the Portland area. The Portland number, 503-232-8818. Each of those persons will be getting the program guide, which tells you what's on and when, and makes KABU an even more valuable resource because we have many hidden jewels. You never know. Sometimes in the middle of the night, we have something that you absolutely have to hear. And they'll be getting the program guide. They'll become members, and they have selected their gift. And they have done it all in like a two-minute phone call, and you can do it too. And this is right now is a great time to do it. Our phone answerers are eager and waiting for your first call. And we always love that first call. It always makes us happy. So come on, you can do it. Make us smile. 503-232-8818. And Helen Caldicott, also, let's see, we have her CDs and her books. So you can get more. You know what? One of the great things about listening to a lecture like this and then getting the book is that you can reinforce what you've just learned. I remember I first became an anti-nuclear activist in 79. And I rode a bicycle to the South Texas nuclear plant because of the way it was being constructed. I was concerned about it. And it was books that allowed me to make that decision that it was worthwhile. It was because I was able to go back to the book until I was able to memorize a few of the more salient points. I mean, you hear Helen talking about different isotopes of uranium. You can get it straight in your head, actually, just a few basic facts. That talk she was giving about Alpha emitters, very true. The depleted uranium that we spewed all over the Middle East and over Yugoslavia is an alpha emitter and is insidious. And Dr. John Goffman calculated that 1/40,000th of an ounce is sufficient to give you lung cancer because it just sits there and keeps ticking away at your chromosomes. And, you know, it's not easy to get out yet. One way to get it out is with vitamin C. But this is the sort of thing you can learn by getting a Helen Caldicott book. And you can get one by, and I would like to suggest $10 a month. But as Trillian said, you can pick any amount. 1-877-500-5266 in the local number. And let's hear that call right now. Let's see if you've got what it takes to make a commitment to social change and start cleaning things up. 503-232-8818.
1-877-500-5266. Call now. We are waiting for your call.
Thank you very much, Trillium and Teresa at Membership Central. Thank you for your talking. And now we're going to return to this informative talk by Dr. Helen Caldicott, recorded here in Portland by KBOO volunteer Marianne Barasonic. We thank her for that. And let's go back to hear more from Dr. Helen Caldicott.
Now, you all know about mutations, don't you? Do you understand how cancers cause... Okay, so radiation damages the regulatory gene. The cell sits latently, cryptogenically, quietly from any time to 5 to 60 years. Then one day, instead of dividing by mitosis in a regulated way, it produces millions and millions and millions of cells. So a single mutation in a single regulatory gene in a single cell by a single alpha particle can kill you. However, the cancer doesn't wear a little sign saying, I was made by some strontium-90 in a Hershey's chocolate bar you ate 20 years ago. Why do I say Hershey's chocolates? Well, Hershey's chocolates is 13 miles from Three Mile Island. Why the hell they built two nuclear power plants in the middle of the richest dairying area in the country, in Pennsylvania, only God knows if there is a God. And they had a meltdown. And that's where the cows graze for the chocolates. And there's been a huge cover-up about how much radiation got up. They don't know because the monitors went off scale almost as soon as the accident began because huge amounts of radiation escaped. In this book, I've got documents from a whistleblower showing that Hershey's powdered the milk for 2 months after the accident so the radioactive iodine, which has a half-life of 8 days, decayed away. But it didn't decay the strontium-90, which lasts for 600 years, or cesium-137 that lasts for 600 years, or plutonium that lasts for 500,000 years. So therefore, when the cows eat the grass, what happens is, and I'll go through this in a minute, is that strontium-90, which is a calcium analog, lands on the soil. The soil, the grass takes up the strontium-90, thinking it's calcium, concentrating it by orders of magnitude. The cows come along, and I'm not so good at drawing a cow. That's not bad, actually. But it has an udder. That's the most important thing. And it eats the grass, and the strontium-90 concentrates by orders of magnitude greater in the milk. And then a woman might eat the Hershey's chocolate milk kiss, and she may be lactating. What does the breast need? It needs calcium, so the body thinks strontium-90 is calcium. It goes to the breast, and the woman later, 20 years later, finds the lump in her breast, and it could have been caused by the strontium-90 eaten by the woman years ago in the Hershey's milk bar. I've been saying this since the accident occurred in a McNeil-Lira debate in the town hall at Harrisburg, just after the accident, and Hershey's hasn't sued me, and I think that I'm right. No, I don't think I'm right. I am right. They can sue me. That's okay. Anyway, they mightn't like what's in this book. But it's very important that people know the truth about what they're eating. Now, how else is radiation dangerous to genes? Well, of course, in the testicles and ovaries. And the fact is that cystic fibrosis is the commonest fatal genetic disease of childhood, and 1 in 25 Caucasians carry the gene for CF. It's recessive. You don't know you've got it till you mate with someone with the same gene and the like. There are now over 16,000 genetic diseases described, and if radiation gets into the testicles or the ovaries, therefore, the incidence of genetic disease will increase. Well, people say, well, isn't that okay, you know, how did it arise in the first place? Once upon a time, the Earth was really radioactively hot. and over eons of time, it's cooled down. However, the radiation caused the mutations in the genes, so fish develop lungs, birds develop wings. You've all learnt about evolution and Darwin, even though there are people in this country who are way back in the dark ages who don't believe in evolution and think God created it in 6 days, did he? He, she, it? Anyway, scientifically, they're out to lunch. Now, the problem is that most mutations are deleterious. They cause disease like cystic fibrosis, phenylketonuria, hemophilia, the like. I can go through hundreds of them. But so for an advantageous mutation like fish developing lungs or wings or whatever to evolve takes millions and millions and millions of years. So what we're doing by increasing the background level of radiation in our food and the like, 40% of the European landmass is still radioactive from Chernobyl, is increasing the deleterious mutations within our testicles and ovaries. But we're not the only species that have testicles and ovaries, are we? All animals have testicles and ovaries, and plants, they all have reproductive mechanisms too, and they can get cancers or have genetic disease. And indeed, after Three Mile Island, there were double-headed daisies, double-headed calves, you name it, they saw a whole lot of malformations. So, and one vet, I was out there, and one veterinary surgeon said to me, watch the animals, he said, because their noses are closest to the ground and they'll pick up the fallout much readily, more readily than human beings because we stand tall. Okay, so that's just a preliminary talk about genetics, and I really do need something to wipe this board. Ben? How can I wipe the board? They're coming. They're running. They're running with a thing. Okay, so now what I want to talk about now is how you make... You've got uranium. You dig it out of the ground, okay? Now you have to dig out thousands of tons of soil to get out the uranium which is in the soil. How do you dig out uranium? What fuel do you use to dig it out? Do you run tractors and steam shovels with nuclear power? How do you fuel steam shovels? Oil. Oh. Oil. And then you have to crush it all up and extract the uranium. That's called milling. How do you run that? With oil. Then you have to enrich it because this has to be enriched, U-235, from 0.7% to 3%. And that's a very energy-consuming process. And your uranium and ours is enriched in Paducah, Kentucky, where they use two 1,000-megawatt coal fire plants to generate the electricity to enrich the uranium. Yet the nuclear industry will tell you in the New Yorker, Scientific American, the New York Times, NPR, which doesn't advertise but is underwritten, I love the euphemisms, by the nuclear power industry, saying that nuclear power doesn't cause global warming. It's a lie, because to create the fuel to put in nuclear reactors, you use a hell of a lot of fossil fuel. When you burn fossil fuel, what does it create? Carbon dioxide. So do you all understand how global warming happens? You understand when you put a car out in the sun, the light from the sun gets in through the glass, the white light. It's converted then to heat, infrared radiation, and the glass traps infrared radiation, and the temperature in the car goes up, what, to 150 degrees? Terribly hot. That's a glass house. So what happens is as the Earth gets covered with layers of carbon dioxide, and I flew across the Pacific the other day. It's usually like a Georgie O'Keeffe painting. Remember when Georgie O'Keeffe first went in a plane and looked down on this blue sky and these beautiful fluffy clouds? And she went in a garage and did a huge painting of clouds. It used to look like that. Do you know the whole of the Pacific was covered with a red-brown haze? The whole of the Pacific. And that's us. Because we insist on driving these SUVs and God knows what, because we think it's our God-given right to pollute the planet. We're in serious trouble. Now, half the global warming gas is made of carbon dioxide, which is created by burning fossil fuel. The rest is created by methane when cows, I can't think of the right word, fart. They eruct methane, which is a very potent global warming gas. Ants produce a lot of methane, and there are other global warming gases, but 50%, oh, that's great, 50% of it is created by carbon dioxide from us burning fossil fuel, and that traps the heat. We're in serious trouble. I think 100 years ago there were 250 parts per billion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's up to 300 or 350. It's getting right up there now, where the changes will be irreversible. And that's what happens to a patient in the intensive care unit, where the heart fails and the kidneys start failing and you get total organ collapse and one thing leads to another. Feedback mechanisms. And that's what's happening on the planet. Okay, now what else happens at the enrichment plant? You know what CFC gas is, carbon, chlorofluorocarbon gas. Let's hands up those who know what about CFC. Okay, for those who don't, we used to use it in refrigerators. We still use it in Ventolin sprays. We used to use it to spray everything, right? Because it was supposed to be an inert gas. But the trouble is we found out it rises up through the atmosphere and gets up to the ozone layer. Now, the ozone layer surrounds the planet like a pair of sunglasses. And it didn't exist before life began, photosynthesis began, and the plants started creating oxygen. The oxygen rose up, turned into oxygen, was converted by UV light to O3, and that's ozone. Ozone traps ultraviolet light getting in from the sun. We know about ultraviolet light because it produces pterygia, produces cataracts, and it produces squamous cell and basal cell carcinomas and also melanomas. 1 in 9 people in Australia get melanomas. Up here it's 1 in about 93, I think. I don't know why the ozone's so thin down here and you've got it thicker up here, but most of the CFC comes from the northern hemisphere down to Australia in the southern hemisphere, and we've got hardly any. And we like sunbaking. We're very racist when it comes to the Aborigines. Amongst the most racist country on Earth, the Aborigines have one of the highest infant mortalities in the world. They're alcoholics, they sniff petrol, and they're in serious trouble, and we're extremely racist, but we like lying almost naked in the sun in the summer, getting very tanned. The dermatologists are so worried about the kids in the sun, they patrol the beaches and tell them to put their clothes on. Because 1 in 9 people are getting melanomas, I've had one on my back. And you know they're terribly malignant. Anyway, so CFC gas is a major, major damaging gas. It's been banned internationally by the Montreal Protocol because of what's happening in Australia and elsewhere. However, the nuclear industry has been grandfathered, and they're allowed to use CFC gas. So there are hundreds of miles of pipes at the enrichment plant in Paducah with uranium hexafluoride gas that's turned into a gas, so it's enriched and pushed through a semi-permeable membrane or in a centrifuge. And those pipes are cooled with CFC refrigerant gas. And there are hundreds of miles of pipes, and they're all leaking because it's all old. So 93% of the CFC gas that's released in America, CFC 114, is released at the enrichment plant. CFC gas not only damages the ozone, but it's 10,000 to 20,000 times more potent as a global warmer than carbon dioxide. Oh, but the nuclear industry says nuclear power doesn't cause global warming. I don't like people who lie. I don't like people who lie about medical problems like Rush Limbaugh. I don't believe in freedom of speech when people lie to the masses so the masses remain ignorant. What your wonderful President Jefferson once said is totally pertinent today. An informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion, and it's up to us, the medical profession, to inform the politicians who are so terribly ignorant and the people about what is actually happening to their earth. And that's called preventive medicine, right? So I'm very cross with the nuclear power industry. I'm extremely cross. And I ring NPR and I say, you've got to get that ad off your radio. And they won't, because why? Because it means money. Well, I don't care about money when I'm sitting next to a patient dying of cystic fibrosis or a child dying of leukemia. What's a life worth? A baby's life? How can you possibly equate lives to money? And we know certain things that cause disease and death. And we must not stand by and allow those things to occur in society because certain corporations are making money. I'm fed up with money. And this society is all about money. I mean, as soon as I enter America, people are screaming at me about how to spend money. But life isn't about money. Life's about serving and helping each other. And you know that in your profession. That's the sense of fulfillment that comes by helping patients through their trauma and helping them to get better, or even helping them to die in peace with themselves. That's what life's about. It's got nothing to do with money.
You're listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott, who spoke in Portland on nuclear power is not the answer on August 11th at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians Conference, which was here in Portland at that time. And this is KBOO Portland, and this is our membership drive, and we will be getting back to Dr. Helen Caldicott's powerful speech in just a minute, but we need to ask you to support this radio station. This is News and Public Affairs Day. We feature speakers all afternoon and also this evening, speakers that we think you would like to hear, speakers who were recorded recently in Portland who have great things to say and to inform us about. And Dr. Helen Caldicott definitely fits into that category. Her talk, along with some of the upcoming talks by Cindy Sheehan, David Corton, and Calvin Trillin, can be yours with your $120 minimum pledge to KBOO. You can get a three CD set of these tapes of political speakers with your pledge to KBOO. And right now with me is Teresa, and I'm not sure if Trillian's with her. Hi, Teresa.
No, Trillian's off this shift.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have another picture soon. But I would also like to mention that we can also offer you Helen Caldicott's book, and you can get that by calling us right now, 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. And for those of you who are out of the dialing area, those of you who might be in, Vancouver or Camas, or where else might you be? Let's see, what's north? Do we go as far as Olympia? Anyone who's using a special loop to listen to us over the mountains, the number to call is 1-877-500-5266. And especially, I would like to hear some calls from Salem, because I've driven through Salem, and I know that you can pick up the KBOO signal, and that people do. And also would like some calls from our translators in Corvallis and Eugene. Come on, 1-877-500-5266, 1-877-500-5266. We have several combinations available. We have people right now waiting. The phone lines are available, and you can get through. Now, if you've got just a couple of minutes, then that's enough time to give us a pledge. It's easier than you think. It's just a matter of getting us the information so we can send you the form, for example, to send us $10 a month out of your bank account, which is my favorite method of pledging. That puts you in the $120 pledge level, which allows you to get, for example, a set of three political CDs. That would include Helen Caldicott, Cindy Sheehan, David Corton, and Calvin Trillin. So obviously one of the CDs has two of them on there. And that's available for $120 minimum pledge. You can do it any way you like, but first call us to arrange it, 503-232-8818. You got $10 in your bank account? Well, then you're okay. You'll have $10 next month. Call right now and join, 503-232-8818. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, hey, this is Ani. It is so crucial that we hear support for this news on public affairs programming. We every 6 months, Kathleen Stevenson works with volunteers to really put together an incredible information-filled 14-hour days worth of programming, so you can stay up to date with in-depth thinkers that have been to town perhaps recently, that we need to hear from. The word needs to get out. Maybe you couldn't hear Dr. Helen Caldicott when she was speaking in town, but Now you can hear that talk, thanks to KABU. It can keep you informed while you're there doing your day job. It can keep you informed as you're there working in your garden. It can keep you informed, as you go about living your life. It enriches you, and that's why you right now, my friend, need to turn around and support KABU, the station that supports the community all year round. 503-232-8818. It's crucial that we do hear from you at this time. We have really appreciated an amazing show of support today, and we want to continue that momentum right now. As Teresa was just saying, we do have the 3-CD set, Dr. Helen Caldicott, Cindy Sheehan, David Corton, and Calvin Trillin, and those are available for you for a $120 minimum pledge. You can do that $10 a month, or you can put it on your credit card when you dial 503-232-8818. I know Dr. Helen Caldicott also has a book, and you can get a special at this point.
It's called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer.
That's right. And you can get the book alone for a $75 minimum pledge. Or if you're interested in sharing the work of Dr. Helen Caldicott with your friends, with your family, with your coworkers, and let them know. I mean, what I love about Helen is that she tends to break down these rather dry, horrific topics, and she puts them out at a very human level, a very accessible level. She's a trained pediatrician that's been working on nuclear issues as a public health sort of angle. For the last 40 years, maybe 35. She's just an amazing voice in the movement for peace, for nuclear disarmament, and for a clean environment. Dr. Helen Caldicott, if you want to share her work with your family, with your friends, you can get the 60, the CD. See, I'm all back in when I think everything's in 60 minutes. You can get the full CD. It is about 60 minutes. And it, also the book. $420 pledge, Helen Caldicott special deal. And that could be yours when you dial 503-232-8818.
Actually, the CD is 79 minutes because it contains 19 minutes of question and answer, which you will not hear on this broadcast. I was just thinking how useful it is to have the book after hearing the lecture, after hearing it on KBOO. For example, you probably just heard Helen Caldicott say that nuclear power does contribute to global warming, and it's through the processing of uranium hexafluoride. And if you want the details on how much, what the numbers are, and if you want to have them at hand, well, heck, you need the book. And so that's a great number. I mean, that's a great reason for you right now to decide that this would be a good time for you to call 503-232-8818. Maybe this is a good time because your boss is not looking. 503-232-8818. 8818 or 1-877-500-KABU. That's our toll-free number. Don't worry about the toll. Call 1-877-500-5266. This is a case where you can let your fingers do the walking and let your checkbook do the talking.
That's right. Do call right now. We just have less than 1 minute left to ask for your much-needed support at your very own community radio station during this fall membership drive. We have just reached $69,000 total in our drive,
yay,
edging our way towards $175,000 in the momentum. Your support, it's been truly fabulous and heartwarming, and we need to keep that going right now to get us all the way over the top of that $175,000 goal to get our needed financial support.
I love the way that
go
we do
community.
It. Piece by piece, just
one
a little contribution.
503-232-8818.
And anyway, in the medical profession, even if we didn't charge our patients, we'll never starve. They'll give us a cake or a chicken or something, because my daughter's got a husband of a patient. The patient's name is Pearl, and I think he's Giorgio. And he makes a beautiful Italian dishes just because he loves her. Because she helps his wife. Anyway, so global warming, we've done that, right? Now, when they've enriched the uranium, let's talk about Iran. Ooh, Iran might be making nuclear weapons. Ooh, where's my microscope? I have to see. Of the 30,000 nuclear weapons in the world, let's be frank, Russia and America own 97% of them. Russia and America still target each other with thousands of nuclear weapons, and we could blow the world up tonight. Yeltsin, who is a hardened alcoholic, got to within 10 seconds of blowing you up in 1995. And that's in one of my books. And yet America's got the gall to go around the world saying Iran shouldn't have any weapons. Well, Iran isn't making weapons. It's enriching uranium to 3% for use in nuclear power plants. If, however, it goes on and enriches it above 50%, maybe it could make a bomb. But the International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran's about 5 to 10 years from making a nuclear weapon. But mark my words, Israel and America are probably going to bomb Iran shortly. If you've ever been to Iran, it's so beautiful. All the streets are named after poets. By God, we think we're cultured. The culture of those Persians and the mosques are so incredibly beautiful. You know what war's about? War is about the destruction of history. And anyway, we've got to stop killing. Who do we think we are? And they're not making nuclear weapons. And George Bush needs to hear that from us. And from everyone else, if he can. Okay, so that's Iran. Now, when you've enriched the uranium, you make it into little pellets like bits of chalk, and you pack it into fuel rods, which are 12 feet long and half an inch thick, like a curtain rod, like you hang your curtains. And you take these rods along to a big nuclear power plant, and you pack 100 tons of uranium into the reactor. Okay? 100 tons. Like that. And it's submerged in water. And you pull out the moderating rods, and this whole thing reaches critical mass like a nuclear explosion, except you don't get an explosion, but the atoms start breaking apart as the neutrons hit each other. You understand that, don't you? They break apart in a random fashion, and you know what? That produces heat. And the heat boils the water. The steam is taken off, which turns a turbine, which generates electricity. All a nuclear power plant is designed to do is to boil water. That's all it's designed to do. It's like cutting a pound of butter with a chainsaw. And the transient byproduct of nuclear power is electricity, so we can turn our lights on. But it only lasts for about 30 years before the whole thing's so radioactive they have to shut it down. Then what do you have? Then you have radioactive waste. Because 200 new elements are made in a random fashion that never existed before man fissioned uranium. And that's radioactive waste. One of them is radioactive iodine. Radioactive iodine. We all know about that, don't we? Because the thyroid uses iodine to make thyroxine, T3 and T4. Okay, so radioactive iodine is one of them. It's got a half-life of 8 days, so it's around for 6 weeks. It only goes to the thyroid. It bioconcentrates by orders of magnitude in the grass, the milk, the cows, breast milk, and into babies. Babies are so, so radiosensitive. So do you know what's happened in Chernobyl? A huge amount of I-131 got out. Over 8,000 people who were children at the time of the accident at Chernobyl have had total thyroidectomies for cancer. Oh, but the nuclear industry said they haven't died. Don't they know that when you get cancer and you have a thyroidectomy, you don't drop dead? Don't they understand about the metastasizing of cancers? A single cell will erode a lymph vessel or a blood vessel and go up to the brain for secondary cancer or into the bone. No, these people are physicists, and I've just debated with some physicists in Australia who said, well, we don't really agree with you. It's very hard to talk to physicists because they don't understand biology, mutagenesis, or medicine, and they give me the dry rot. And they're very arrogant. And I told them I'd given this lecture at Harvard recently to my alma mater at Children's Hospital Medical Center, the creme de la creme of American pediatrics, and that they were shocked, and they didn't really buy that. They said, oh, well, you know, life has risks. You have to cross a road. You might get run down by a car. You know, you might be in a car and have an accident. So there's a bit of a risk from nuclear power, but it's all right. We can live with that risk. I mean, these guys are out to lunch. Have they ever sat next to a child dying of leukemia? Have they ever had to tell a parent their child, baby has hips arrhythmia, has to be on steroids and then will probably die? And yet, you know, when those people are on their deathbeds and they're dying or their child is dying, that's when I see their real humanity. Because they really do care about themselves, but they're so blocked with this crazy hypertrophied left brain. that they used to rationalize what their reptilian midbrain wants them to do. Sort of walk around with a hypertrophied left brain. They can't keep their head straight up. Okay, so radioactive iodine, dangerous, but it only lasts 6 weeks. Hershey's froze the milk or powdered the milk, that's okay. So what? I'm only using a few. There are 200 isotopes. Strontium-90, well, we all know about that because Linus Pauling said that strontium-90 coming out from the fallout from weapons testing would concentrate in the milk. Children would drink the milk. Strontium-90, being a calcium analog, would go to bone where it could mutate an osteoblast. Yeah, and cause osteogenic sarcoma, or mutate a primitive white blood cell and cause leukemia, lymphatic or myelogenous leukemia. And strontium-90 has a half-life of 28 years, so it's around for 600 years, and it's a calcium analog, and it's nasty stuff. The next one is cesium-137, which is a potassium analog. We know about potassium, don't we? Potassium goes down, you can kill a patient or you can inject them with some potassium and kill them because the heart stops. Very important stuff. It's in every cell. It's ubiquitous. Causes brain cancer and rhabdomyosarcomas. It's got a half-life of 30 years, so it's around for 600 years. And both of these are beta emitters and gamma. Okay, then the next one that I'll describe is plutonium. Who was Pluto? Huh? The dog? Yeah, he was the god of hell. He was also the dog. Okay, plutonium, alpha emitter, described by Glenn Seaborg, who discovered it as the most toxic material known to the human race, but there are more toxic ones. Only an alpha emitter. Doesn't get through the skin, but if inhaled into the lung, less than a millionth of a gram, 10 to the minus 6 grams, is carcinogenic. This might be 10 to the minus 9. When they injected it into beagle dogs, they didn't find a dose low enough that didn't give all the dogs cancer. It's incredibly carcinogenic. It is an iron analog. So when it gets into the body, it combines with transferrin and it's transferred to the liver where it's stored, where it can cause liver cancer. Bone cancer and leukemia. It, unlike most things, can get through the placenta into the developing embryo, where, like thalidomide, it can damage a cell that's going to form the left half of the brain. It's teratogenic. Okay? And it has a predilection for testicles, and many men in the Northern Hemisphere have plutonium sitting right next to the spermatogonia in their genitalia, the precursors of the sperm, where if the spermatogonia are irradiated, so we're going to see an increase over time of genetic disease. And why do most people in the Northern Hemisphere have plutonium in their gonads? Because it's still coming out from weapons testing days, when the physicists blew these blasted bombs up in the atmosphere. They're addicted to explosions. They're now building and developing and designing new nuclear weapons in the nuclear weapons labs right now as I speak. They are kind of sick, these men. They're nice men, kind of, but they're addicted to nuclear explosions. I interviewed one once. Nice fellow, Ted Taylor. He designed the suitcase bomb. You could carry around a hydrogen bomb in your suitcase. Great for blowing up planes or anything else, like cities. And, you know, he's very worried about nuclear weapons. He's since died, and I said, but he talked about these explosions. I said, Ted, you're addicted to explosions. He said, yes. You know, I suppose we all have our fallibilities. Okay, now, the problem with plutonium is it's got a long half-life. Its half-life is 24,400 years. And it's around for 500,000 years. And the magic thing about it is you only need 10 pounds of it to make yourself an atomic bomb. The design is on the internet. You can buy some material at the local hardware shop. All you need to do is pinch 10 pounds of plutonium and you got yourself a nice nuclear weapon. And I don't know why it hasn't happened yet that terrorists haven't used nuclear weapons. I suppose it will happen. Now, let's get back to... Oh, and that's radioactive waste. And at the moment, America's got 50,000 tons of this waste sitting in what they call cooling pools beside the reactor, or swimming pools, they euphemistically call them. In a reactor, there's as much long-lived radiation as that released by the explosion of 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs, and you've got 103 of them all around your country. Terrorists don't need nuclear weapons. They need a few big planes, or they need some hand you know, shoulder held missiles. In the cooling pools is as much as 30 times as much radiation as in the reactor core, because they don't know where to put the waste and they're re-racking it to really crowd the pools with radioactive waste. The water circulates continuously, but if it stops circulating, the pools melt down. Or if you attack a cooling pool and let the water leak out, then you've got a meltdown in the cooling pool. And I write about that. There's been some good articles about this. A nuclear reactor needs 1 million gallons a minute of cooling water. But you don't know what's happening in France and Europe now and here? As global warming occurs, the level of the rivers is falling because it's getting to be drought times. They're not getting enough water to cool the reactors. And the water is too hot. Above 98 degrees, it's not going to cool the reactor. So they're having to slow the reactor down or even shut it down at a time when people want to turn their air conditioners on. And as global warming increases, people say, oh, geez, I'm hot. I'm going to turn on the air conditioner. How do you run air conditioners? By burning coal or by fissioning uranium? So it's a vicious cycle. Get hot, don't want to sweat, turn the air conditioner on, keep cool, adds to global warming, radioactive waste, CFC gas, destroys the ozone layer, and the hotter it gets, the more air conditioners we need, and the hotter we get, we can't cool our reactors. Aren't we a stupid species? I mean, really, I don't think the dolphins would be so stupid. I surf with the dolphins in the morning, you know, they surf in the waves. I don't think they say to each other, Jack, I think I'll have a human steak for dinner tonight. I mean, we are a very stupid species, and yet we do know better. But we can't seem to control ourselves. I can, but...
You're listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. She's speaking on Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. It's the title also of her current book. That book is available with your membership to KBOO. I think it's a $75 minimum pledge to join KBOO at this time. News and Public Affairs Day is a great day to join. And you could get her book. You could get a combination of her book and the recording that you're hearing right now. That's for a $120 pledge. We need to get a few more phone calls ringing before we go back to Dr. Helen Caldicott. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. I think we might be about a tenth of the way towards our goal for this show. Hi, Teresa.
A tenth of the way is correct, and that's the way it goes. Sometimes if you've been stunned by what you've been listening to, well, there's good reason for that, isn't there? But you can certainly buttress what you've just heard and have that imprint right in front of you, and also have a CD copy by calling us and pledging $10 a month, $10 a month out of your pledge, your pledge account, out of your bank account. And we can do that just by talking to you for a couple of minutes and sending you a form to fill out in the mail. My gosh, it's easy. 503-232-8818. I love Pledge Drive. There's so many people here. It's so much fun. There's so much food. And it's just a big party for me. And you could make it even more of a party by making the phone ring right now. 1-877-500-5266. By the way, you might want to get on the phone and tell some of your friends that we're not doing our usual programming right now. We are doing News and Public Affairs Day, and we're going to keep doing it until 9 p.m. or 9:30. I forget exactly. So you're going to have one lecture after another like this, one mind-blowing epiphany after another, and we'll have the books and the CDs to back up every single one of them. And so this is a great time to call. Call right now, get Helen Caldicott's book and CD, 503-232-8818. Give us $10 a month. You can do that. Come on. 1-877-500-5266.
That's right. And thanks so much, Teresa. It's true. We do need to hear from you right now. I want to thank Victoria, new member in Portland. Thank you so much, Victoria. I want to thank you when you dial 503.
She's in Hillsborough.
Whoops. I want to thank Victoria in Hillsborough. Perhaps I want to thank Victoria in Portland, too. We just don't know it yet. Victoria in Portland, call us. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. $120 gets you your choice, either the 4-CD political set or the single CD of Helen Caldicott and her latest book. I think that is an incredible deal. And you know, of course, it also gets you your support of community radio. all year round. KBOO Community Radio needs to hear from you. We listen to you when it comes to our governance. We listen to you when it comes to programming ideas. Now we need to hear from you in the form of support for the programming you need. 503-232-8818. Dr. Helen Caldicott is who you've been listening to, speaking on nuclear power not being the answer. It was recorded August 11th at the Portland Convention Center. It's a $120 minimum pledge, gets you a copy of this talk and a copy of her book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer.
You know what bugs me?
503-232-8818.
What bugs me about Helen Caldicott is people don't take her seriously. I think just because she's a woman, I've heard the term hysterical applied to her, which is certainly a sexist term. But if you get her book, you'll see that everything that she says has an absolute scientific basis.
Absolutely.
That she knows what she's talking about, that she is an expert, and she's on top of things. She reminded me when she was talking about the reduced amount of water available to nuclear reactors. Another aspect of what we've been doing to our oceans has been the excess numbers of jellyfish. We have overfished, and so jellyfish have been taking up the nutrients, and they've been clogging reactors. And what she said also is very relevant to the Northwest, because we're downwater, downstream from Hanford Nuclear Reservation. It's also very relevant to us because we have so many soldiers coming back with, yes, alpha-emitting uranium in their lungs right now, and you need to know what to do about it. And Helen Caldicott's book can give you a leg up.
503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. Or outside the local dialing area, call us at toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO. That's 1-877-500-5266. Helen Caldicott is such an incredible voice, an amazingly brilliant scientist, I think, one of the founders of the Physicians for Social Responsibility, someone who makes really hard science and really unpleasant things to hear, to listen to, accessible. And what I love about her is I've been able to share information from Helen Caldicott in the past. I've gotten CDs of Helen Caldicott in the past. I think I've actually recorded those talks by Helen Caldicott in the past, and actually been able to share them with folks who don't necessarily agree to begin with, who don't necessarily, well, think like we do. You know, we're accused of preaching to the choir sometime. I think it's important to get this information into the hands of folks who genuinely mean well, but just don't have the information. Helen Caldicott makes this accessible. It's very digestible information and compelling. As Teresa said, well-researched, well-analyzed information.
Oh, sure. Well, she made reference.
503-232-8818.
She made reference to the beagles who had been experimented with. That's a really sad story. There were actually hundreds of beagles. For a long time, they were frozen. The dead beagles, they, as she said, they could not find an amount of plutonium low enough not to give the beagles cancer. So there, for decades, there were hundreds of frozen beagles that the U.S. kept on hand, and I think they finally buried them in deep concrete. It also reminds me of having a discussion. She was talking about how some physicists are quite arrogant. I remember having a discussion with a rather arrogant physicist who had just given a discussion at a university I was attending, and he was talking about vitrification. And after talking with him, he finally admitted that vitrification wouldn't work. I said, well, why do you do it? And he says, well, I've got a kid to put through college. 503-232-8818 is the number to call, and you can get the book, and you can have all of this information at your fingertips, and no one will be able to say to you, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, because it's very accessible, as Ani was saying.
And it's information that we need to know in our communities to keep ourselves empowered and doing right action. 503-232-8818. The right action for you to take right now, my friend, is to go to the phone and help us raise the $1,000 that we need to keep us on track and going strong. Today, our very special semi-annual News and Public Affairs Day. Again, one more time, those numbers, 503-232-8818.
It's exciting.
Or 1-877-500-5266.
Thank you, Teresa and Ani. I hate to cut you short there a little bit. Please continue to call. We have a tight schedule today, and we want to fit in the rest of this. Dr. Helen Caldicott, we're a little bit behind. Cindy Sheehan's recent talk at the Baghdad Theater is coming up next. We want to fit that in. And so let's go back to Dr. Caldicott, but please continue to call and support our station.
On most things. So we've got cooling pools, and then we've got waste. 50,000 tons of the stuff sitting at 103 nuclear power plants around America, all of which could be attacked by terrorists, and I could melt a nuclear power plant down in about 2 hours. In my book, it shows you how. They nearly had a meltdown in Sweden the other day when it's so hot there, they lost their electricity supply externally that keeps the cooling water circulating. I think there was a lightning strike. They had four emergency generators, two of which failed to start. For 20 minutes, no one knew what was happening, like at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, and they got two of them to work. It was the closest they'd come to a meltdown since Chernobyl. I tell you what, if there's a meltdown in this country, that's the end of nuclear power forever. And it's going to happen sooner than later, because they're extending the lifespan of nuclear power plants because they make a lot of money. To build a new one costs $5 to $6.5 billion, so they don't want to do that. It's better to keep operating an old one and extend its life by 20 years. But by that time, the metal's so brittle from neutron radiation, the pipes crack and they fall apart and plug up old pipes and stuff. But, you know, it's great because they make a lot of money. That's what they're doing. Wall Street won't touch nuclear power with a 10-foot pole because they're going to be burnt financially. And money is the only thing that matters. Okay, this waste they want to take to a place in Nevada called Yucca Mountain. Yucca Mountain, which is made of pumice. You know what pumice is? The sort of dust from a volcano. It's very porous. Yep. And it's transected by 32 earthquake faults. They're digging big holes in it. They want to put the nuclear waste in there. The people in Nevada are dead against it. It's 50 miles from where's the big gambling city? Las Vegas. They don't like that idea in Las Vegas. And anyway, if there is a volcano or there's an earthquake, all of the radioactive waste could be released. Or if these containers rust, plutonium will leak down and 10 pounds could collect in a crevice, which is critical mass. There could be a nuclear explosion and spread the radioactive waste to the four winds. Yeah, they said, yeah, well, we hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, that's definitely a possibility. So that's your storage of radioactive waste. And as the radioactive waste leaks and seeps into the underground water supplies and bioconcentrates in the food, you don't say, I can taste the strontium-90 in this fish, because our senses didn't evolve to pick up radioactive materials in our food. We can't detect them. And then when we get our cancers, it's too late. And I can imagine a future down the time track where people wake up, their breast milk's already radioactive, their baby's being born deformed from teratogenesis or getting genetic disease, and the children getting their cancers at the age of 5 instead of 60. When I tell that to the nuclear industry, they say I'm exaggerating. They've never seen a child with leukemia, and they really give me the dry rot. And they're the ones in control. They're the ones who have the ear of the government, because they parade around like they're Merlin, you know, with those big hats, you know, like they're wizards, because they have captured the energy of the atom which makes the sun burn. And most politicians are scientifically illiterate, like Domenici and like Bush and like Cheney. They haven't a clue what's going on. All they know is these men have a lot of power at their fingertips. And so we, the doctors and the medical profession, have to get in there and educate our politicians and teach them basic biological facts, so that at least they represent our children and all future generations. The legacy we leave from nuclear power is epidemics of cancer, leukemia and genetic disease, and I don't believe that's moral. It's not medically indicated. And we've got to start turning our lights off. America could save 28% of the electricity it currently uses by not using clothes dryers. Ooh, but how do you dry your clothes? Oh, you hang them outside in the sun. In Atlanta, you're not allowed to hang your clothes out in the sun because Mrs. Brown might see your brassiers.
or your underpants. I mean, how pathetic. And in the winter, you hang them up in the furnace beside, you know, in the furnace. You hang them up beside the furnace in the basement. Don't use dishwashers. They use a lot of electricity. Put some water in the sink. Don't run it continuously. Put some water in the sink with a bit of detergent and wash your dishes by hand. Clean your fingernails when you've been out in the garden. It's a nice meditative experience, but just save energy. The amount of energy you use for your clothes dryers almost equals the amount of energy made by nuclear power in America. The whole thing's crazy. And anyway, we don't have the entitlement to use electricity. I mean, Mozart wrote by candlelight, and so did Mozart. When I was a little girl, our bread and milk was delivered by horse and cart. I'm 68. Dad used to walk along with a bucket and a shovel, pick up the manure and grow the beans in the manure. We have no right to keep everything turned on at light. All those blinking lights, CDs, you know, VCRs, televisions, computers, you have to turn it all off. That sucks up an enormous amount of electricity. We don't have the right to use electricity like this, because the way you make electricity is by burning coal, and the earth is heating up. If the Greenland ice cap melts, you know from Al Gore's film, the oceans could rise 6 meters. And one third of the human race will drown. And most species will die because the earth's getting hot and they can't survive these high temperatures. We cohabit the planet with 30 million other species, all of which are really more important than we are, because we are proliferating exponentially out of control. In the year 1800, there were 1 billion human beings. There are now 6.5 billion of us. And George Bush won't even allow people to use condoms. I bet his twins do. And I bet they've had abortions. You know, just being practical, you know, people come for abortions. People who used to come to me first for abortions were Catholic women whose children were pregnant, or who were pregnant by a man who wasn't their husband. I mean, of course, you know, it's just medicine, you know, dealing with human beings. Anyway, so, we've got to start using our brains, and all electricity now can be generated by sun, wind. Farmers are making more money with wind farms now than growing food in the Midwest. There's enough wind west of the Mississippi to supply the whole of America with electricity. Geothermal power, cogeneration, and you can save 28% of the electricity you currently use by turning off your lights. I only leave one globe on in my house at night, and that's where I am. And as I pass through, I turn off all the lights. It's easy. Europe uses 50% less electricity than you, and they have the same standard of living because they turn their lights off. Don't worry about oil. Oil has nothing to do with electricity. It doesn't generate electricity. Oil is used for transportation, and that's another thing we've got to do. Portland, you lead the world, or you're one of the countries that leads the world in saving electricity. And I'll just read you one lovely thing in my book about Portland, because you're one of my hero cities. Cities themselves are now instigating energy-saving initiatives. The city of Portland is an outstanding example. Portland managed to reduce CO2 emissions below those of 1990, which is what the Kyoto Accords calls for, by encouraging a major increase in public transport, constructing 750 miles of new bicycle tracks, which is good for the cardiovascular system, and increasing the number of people commuting by foot or bike by 10%. All city employees were offered $25 per month bus pass or carpool parking, and city lights have been replaced with energy-saving diodes. Financial incentives and technical assistance are provided to people who construct green buildings with built-in efficiency and who weatherize homes. The population is very proud and enthusiastic about these developments because they are cheap, they reduce traffic congestion, and tax dollars saved on conservation are free to be spent on more constructive activities. Mayor Tom Potter, who drives a Prius hybrid, and so do I, is excited and said that Portland is thriving economically. Architects have a huge role to play. Every building should be a solar design building facing south, passively heated and cooled. Every building should have a solar collecting panel on the roof, It should be subsidized by the federal government instead of spending nearly $1 trillion on death. Every house should have a solar hot water system. They're cheap as hell and save a huge amount of energy. If you generate your own electricity on your house, there's no loss in the grid. It goes straight into your... And you can run everything you need with solar. It's easy. Now, I just want to finish with one thing, and that's the nuclear weapons situation. America's got 7,500 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert. What does that mean? They're on missiles ready to go with the press of the button. The commander-in-chief happens to be George Bush. If they wake him up at 3 in the morning from REM force sleep saying the missiles are on their way, what does he decide? He has 3 minutes to make a decision. In 1975... Boris Yeltsin, who is a hardened alcoholic, he probably had Korsakoff syndrome and Wernicke's encephalopathy, they noticed a missile going up where your tridents roam. You've got 18 Trident submarines, 14 of whom have 24 missiles, and on each missile are 10 hydrogen bombs. One hydrogen bomb would vaporize Portland or Boston or New York, just one. There are 240 major cities in the Northern Hemisphere, and each of those 14 Tridents has 24 missiles, and each missile has 10 hydrogen bombs. That 240 hydrogen bombs on 14 Trident submarines. And the Russians saw a missile going up near where the Tridents roam, near Moscow, and they said, America's launched a first strike because you've still got a policy to fight and win a nuclear war against Russia. Even though Russia's your best friend, or at least not an enemy. And Yeltsin, for the first time in the history of the nuclear age, opened the football. Hands up those who know what the football is. If you watch George Bush always walking just behind him is a man with a suitcase. In it is the computer to start a nuclear war. When Ronald Reagan was shot, they lost the football for 2 days. They lost it. When George Bush met with the late Pope, between their legs, underneath the table, sat the football to destroy God's creation. It's worse than Kafka. So they opened the football for the first time ever, and there's Yeltsin, inebriated, his generals over his shoulder saying, "Press that button, Mr. President," and he had 3 minutes to decide whether or not to destroy you all. 10 seconds before the end of that 3 minutes had elapsed, the missile veered off course. It was a weather satellite launched by Norway on an old American missile. They closed the football. That was a full-page article in the New York Times, buried at the back, not front page, 10 seconds from annihilation. We're on that hair trigger alert every single day. And as they talk about maybe dropping a nuclear weapon in Iran or using one in Lebanon or in Iraq, that's the background of extreme anxiety upon which the background of the nuclear weapons stand ready to be launched any second of any day. And no one's taking any notice of it. It's the elephant in the sitting room which everyone ignores. And it's medically a problem because nuclear war would create the final epidemic of the human race and we'll all be dead. Because as all the cities burn, just huge conflagrations of 3,000 square miles of burning for each bomb, a huge cloud of toxic black radioactive smoke will rise up and encircle the planet, block out the sun for up to a year, creating a short ice age, and we'll all freeze to death in the dark. Cockroaches might survive. And that stays with us to this day, even though the Cold War is over. So the Cold War has become hot. The Russian early warning system is degraded and decayed. It doesn't work. They're scared stiff that you're going to bomb them by accident. On 9/11, you got to the highest state of nuclear alert, ready to launch. I want to call together a conference of Russians and Americans in General Cartwright, who's in charge of your Strategic Air Command, get them in a room by themselves at the Rockefeller Estate to say, why are you threatening life on the planet? The real rogue states are Russia and America. and no one knows it. It's really scary. And I can't die until I'm sure that our children and their children will have a future, and that all species on the planet, the kangaroos, the koalas, the elephants, will survive, that God's creation. I can't die until I'm sure of that. And I'll be sure of it when we get rid of those bombs, and we could do it tonight. Gorbachev and Reagan almost did it over a weekend, almost decided to abolish nuclear weapons bilaterally. And we must close down every single nuclear power plant tomorrow. It's easy. All we stop doing is using clothes dryers and turn off our lights. There are enough people in this room with enough knowledge, morality, and dedication and passion that you show to your patients to do those two things. That's called using democracy. And remember, in a democracy, you are the leaders, and the politicians are your representatives and followers. Make sure that they understand what I've said today. Teach them and turn this country into the country it really should be, the shining light on the hill to save the world for all posterity. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott speaking in Portland on August 11th at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. Thanks to Marianne Barasonic for recording that talk on Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. We very much appreciate having that for you today. And if you appreciate it, we need to hear from you now. We're a little behind schedule on our News and Public Affairs Day. We have the talk that Cindy Sheehan just gave a couple weeks ago at the Baghdad Theater. We have that coming up for you in a few minutes. But right now we need to entreat you to hopefully get you to go to your phone and make your call of support to KABU. We're trying to raise $1,200 in this segment, and you can help us by calling 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. This is a great CD to get if you're interested in this issue. It has about 20 more minutes on it of question and answer that are really quite good. I've heard those, but we don't have time to play those for you today. If you'd like to get that, Teresa and Ani, I think. Is Ani there with you, Teresa?
Ani is somewhere in the vicinity and will probably join me in just a moment. But right now I'm looking for a double shot of whiskey after listening to Helen Caldicott. And maybe someone will show up here at KABU and give it to me. Whoa, heavy just a little bit, but, you know, that's the truth. And we have to deal with the truth. And knowing the truth and dealing with it is a stronger position than not knowing, isn't it? You can encourage this sort of truth-telling. And you can get a copy of the book that that Helen Caldicott has written called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. And you can get a copy of that speech with the question and answer session. And that can be a pretty darn good basket of seeds to plant in the garden of your mind and of other people's minds. And you'll find that fruitful indeed. The number to call, 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. And for those of you outside the 405 loop, well, considerably outside, you can call 1-877-500-5266. I don't see any whiskey here. How about rum? I know we've got several pirate types around here. Anybody got any rum? Anyway.
Watermelon.
Watermelon. Watermelon isn't cutting it. 1-877-500-5266. We would love to hear that phone ring right now. And, you know, when you call, you're going to get the KABU Listener's Guide. And one thing I hadn't been mentioning is that we have about 20...
Watermelon can cut anything, actually. It's kind of rounded.
It kind of depends on how fast it's going, I guess. The Listener Guide not only tells you what's on and when, which is very handy, but also lists the businesses, and I think there's more than a couple dozen of them, that offer you 10, 20, 30% off their services, just everything from guitar repair to massage. It's wonderful to be a KABU member with your KABU card, and it pays off. So now's the time to call 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. I wonder how that would translate into music.
Well, while you come up with the chromatic scale, I'll give out that other number. That's 1-877-500-5266. We would love to hear from some more listeners right now wanting to participate, wanting to join the community, wanting to, I got to take that back. You're already a part of the community because you're listening.
We are the community. 2-8-8-1-8.
There you go. We are the community radio station. You are the community. Therefore, it only works when you actually come forward right now with some of your money to actually help keep things going here at KABU Community Radio. We need to raise, I would say, looking like about $700. That's what it looks like to me. And we can do it with your support, with your help. We just had a wonderful listener, Jane, stop in and come in and talk to us.
And she found us at 20 Southeast 8, just east of the bridge, just east of Burnside Bridge, off Burnside Street.
That's right, just east of the bridge and just south of Burnside. That's where we are, a little blue building on your way to anywhere, 20 Southeast 8th. We love to meet folks that have been moved, that have been inspired, that have been informed, that have been outraged by the words that you've been hearing today. And please do stop by, meet us, get a tour of the station, see where your hard-earned money is going, and talk to us further about your thoughts, your ideas around community, around social change. We love to hear that. 503-232-8818.
Marcus,
again?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Marcus, Rona, and Dennis have all called in to join. And now, let's see, we've gotten, I think, more than $455 in. Yes.
Well, yes, yes. We're edging up there, but we need to hear from folks now. We're looking for about $500 more right now. When you dial 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. I'm very heartened by the amount of outpouring of support this morning, and I know that that can continue on throughout this afternoon. We'll be hearing from Cindy Sheehan in just a moment. I do want to let you know, again, you could get for a $120 minimum pledge, a 3-CD political set, the best of our News and Public Affairs Day. That's Helen Caldicott, Cindy Sheehan, David Corton, and Calvin Trillin. Amazing thinkers and analysts and movers and shakers in social change, political analysis, social, cultural, I mean, Calvin Trillin, my God, cultural movers and doers here brought to you from your very own community radio station, KBOO, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
That's right, Ani, and we have a couple more minutes. We'd like to really raise that money before we go to Cindy Sheehan. We're a little beyond time, but we'd like to get a few more phone calls before we play Cindy Sheehan right here on KABU.
Well, great. We've got two people on the line right now, and they're spending their 2 minutes, and they're making their pledges, and we're moving ahead on that goal towards our $1,200 goal. I believe that we have another $400 to raise.
Wow, that's really close. So we could do that. A couple people, I don't know if there are books left of Helen Caldicott, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, if you're a Helen Caldicott fan. I think this is really one of her better speeches. I really liked his speech and thought that it was a really good example of what Helen Caldicott does. And if you want to get an extra bit of information, take advantage of this opportunity to support KABU and get the book or the CD of the talk.
$475 to go. We're moving forward. 503-232-8818.
Just a couple more calls of support. 503-232-8818.
Your gesture against nuclear war.
It's, you know, she's such, it's so true. Kathleen, Teresa, you've said it. You need to call and help us reach that goal. Know that you are concerned about the environment, about the effect of nuclear proliferation, about the effect of the nuclear power, and, you know, all of that radioactive background that we have in our lives. Dr. Helen Caldicott, such an insightful voice on the topic. Share the information with your friends. For $120, you can get that special combination offer of her latest book, plus the copy of the lecture you just heard, uninterrupted by Teresa and myself, though charming we may be. Nuclear power is not the answer, says Dr. Helen Caldicott, who could argue $120 minimum pledge gets you that for your thank you gift and gets your support coming into KABU all year round. 503-232-8818. Together, we are strong and can do great things, but it takes each and every one of us responding to that call. Won't you respond now? 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
You know, we take a little longer doing our pledge drives, and that's because we don't take corporate, we don't take national or multinational corporate money. We don't do those little blurbs for them. We have little shops that add to our support, and we're very proud of them. But mostly we depend on your input, and that is what characterizes the station. That is what allows us to be a consistent voice for voices that are not heard, a consistent voice of dissent. 503-232-8818. You're going to be glad to get this book and the CD because you'll be much better informed once you've gone through them. 1-877-500-5266 for those of you in Corvallis, Eugene, Vancouver, Camas, White Salmon, Hood River. Great time to call 1-877-500-KABU, 1-877-500-5266.
That's right. We are edging towards that goal of $1,200. We have, just about $400 left to make. And right now, that can happen so quickly. Please do dial $10 a month. If you have $10 in your wallet right now, my friend, take a leap of faith and think about having that $10 going towards KABU this month, next month, even the month after that, until it adds up to $120 in a year. It's so amazing to me how easy it is to give that way. I know it's much easier for me to give that way rather than even come up with $40 or $60 all at one time. 503-232-8818. Budget in your community support, won't you? 503-232-8818. Three CDs set for $120 minimum pledge. Helen Caldicott, Cindy Sheehan, David Corton, and Calvin Trillin. Each or any one of those CDs available for a $60 pledge this afternoon. But why not take the whole set for $120 minimum pledge? Your support so urgently needed at your community radio station. Participate now. Be an active part of the community. Be an owner, listener, member of KABU. 503-232-8818.
Thank you, Ani. Thank you, Teresa. And thanks to those of you who have called. Thank you so much. And we'll still be talking to you a little later, those of you who haven't called yet, 503-232-8818. We are going to go now to this next program in our afternoon of speakers. This is a very recent talk in Portland, October 2nd, recorded at the Baghdad Theater by KABU volunteer Mel Resler, who also produced this. It's Cindy Sheehan, and there is an introduction included in this one, so we'll just go to that now.
Good evening. On behalf of Powell's on Hawthorne, I'd like to welcome you to the Baghdad Theater. I'd like to take a moment to thank the Baghdad for its support in hosting this event and for having such a great staff to work with. We are pleased and very proud tonight to present Cindy Sheehan. Cindy is the mother of the late Specialist Casey Austin Sheehan, U.S. Army, and a co-founder of Gold Star Families for Peace, an organization devoted to families who have lost loved ones in Iraq. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Cindy Sheehan.
Thank you. Awesome.